So, when it comes to the tiki business, that has intrigued me. let's talk about that. What is tiki? Like, tiki has to do with Hawaii, right?
Right. Yeah, tiki is basically, you know, a kind of subculture. Well, especially now, like these days.
Does it have anything to do with lowbrow? Like, what's the deal? Like, when I see lowbrow,
yeah,
I see tiki.
Yeah. Yeah, please continue though.
Yeah?
Continue into lowbrow.
Lowbrow. So like, I don't know, I saw a documentary about it, and I mean, lowbrow, for me, some of the technique, I don't know if it's airbrush or what it is. Like, some of the technique is actually more than lowbrow. It's like, lowbrow, it's utterly beautiful, some of the lowbrow.
It's just, you know, weird, bizarre pop culture. I find it just hilarious, you know. I just like the whole, you know, 60s vibe that it has into the 70s, really. But I suppose there's a certain nostalgic type of kitschiness to it that I just find really very amusing.
I'm into even the hair and the dresses.
Right. Everything about it.
In some of the old movies, like when I went down to Missouri for Skepticon, I was on Route 66.
Oh, cool.
And it's always been sort of a dream of mine to like go through Route 66 and just drive along and just like go to all these places that time has forgotten or something.
I know. I love that. There's these kind of time capsules of weirdness, you know, where things are kind of suspended. And at the same time, they're very current, but they're reinvented sort of pockets of weirdness. And it's very creative too, right? Because like tiki died, and then it's recently been going through a rebirth as a kind of, you know, subculture type phenomenon where, again, there's a lot of creative wackiness, if you will, because it's make-believe, right? Tiki is basically an imaginary, you know, Polynesian paradise that doesn't really exist, even though places like Hawaii have adopted a lot of, you know, tiki culture, because when tourists went down there, they were expecting these types of imaginary things. And, you know, some of it, you know, got incorporated and then mixed up into, you know, what was already existent in the local culture. And so that's really, you know, kind of very, very sort of amusing, fun, free-spirited Play-Doh kind of art. I don't know, exploring one's imagination, I guess, and again, that kind of carefree way. And it's so colorful, and it just doesn't take itself very seriously, you know. For all these reasons, I find it extremely interesting.
You know, my first, I think my first exposure to tiki might have actually been Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Well, exactly. When I was a kid. There's Tiki at Pee-wee's Playhouse. You know, he's got the Tiki statues and he's got the hula girl in there. You know, they even have this great, you know, kind of luau party in the first season of Pee-wee's Playhouse where they have, you know, the poo-poo platters and all this great stuff.
I didn't know what a poo-poo platter was until I came to Montreal, actually, and I ordered it.
Right. It's just a bunch of fruit and all kinds of things. It depends, I think. I don't know. I have this fantastic book in here. It's this giant coffee table book called Tiki Pop. And it basically, you know, recounts the entire history of tiki and, you know, how it was politically, you know, there were certain elements of it at one point that were politically incorrect. And then that got reinvented as well, you know, in a more modern appreciative way, if you will. I don't know. I guess what I like the most about it is that it's so joyous. You know, it's incredibly joyous, and there's kind of a childlikeness to it that I find really quite irresistible. And again, it's just that really taking itself seriously and being, you know, unabashedly kitschy. You know, it's just there's this great club in Vegas that I had actually wanted to go to Vegas next summer, but I'm not going to be going because I'm just exhausted and really drained here, and I'm not much of a traveler, and this is becoming more and more apparent as the years go by. But it's a place called Frankie's Tiki Room. And you know, this place, oh, it's just unbelievable. This place looks like straight out of the 50s, you know. It's just so trashy. It's just beautiful. Because it's beautiful, you know, John Water-esque aura to it, basically. You know, they on their website, they were saying that, you know, they have TV screens in there. And actually, if you see the inside, it's just, you have to see it to believe it. It's just kitsch from floor to ceiling and palm leaves. And oh my gosh, on the website, or actually it was someone somewhere discussing this place. And they mentioned that, you know, they show basically old Hawaiian movies and old burlesque and, you know, vintage porn.
So that's
so funny.
That reminds me of one place I was at in where was I? Also in Las Vegas. And it was, I think it was a Howard Johnson. There's a Howard Johnson on the strip, like on the old strip. Like, I don't even know what it's called, but it's the way off the beaten path, sort of north. And the tiki bar was still there, and it was all laid out. It was, you had like volcano gods out front, right, the whole deal.
It's you know, there's kind of a, you know, Big Lebowski kind of a thing going on there. I just like this. Again, the joyfulness of it and the not taking yourself really too seriously. I rather like that a lot. You know, you see a lot of, you know, there's obviously some things you have to take seriously, but I think for the most part, there's way too many things being taken way too seriously most of the time. And I think that tends to get us all bogged down in, you know, non-issues. And I think it impedes progress in a way.
There's another place, actually, I want to go to. I've never been there, and I don't know if it's still there after the hurricane that rolled through New York a while ago, but Coney Island.
Gosh, that's another thing that's awesome. I mean, actually, you know, speaking of Pee Wee Herman, last night I was watching Big Top Pee Wee.
Is that the one with Large Marge?
No, that's the first one. That's Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Yeah,
hilarious.
Large Marge. Tell him Large Marge sent ya. No, the Pee-wee's Big Top Pee-wee is actually even more. It has more of a an absurdity to it than the first one, which is saying something. But it has, you know, gloriously Chaplin-esque moments to it. But Pee-wee's on a farm, right? So he's got all his animals and so on, and he's got this laboratory where he's growing these gigantic vegetables there to solve, you know, problems of hunger, etc.
I've got to watch this again. I don't remember any of that.
And see, the thing is that at one point, and you know, the townspeople are all these elderly, dried up people who, you know, are having a very hard time enjoying anything anymore. And they find Pee-wee to be fairly problematic, you know, even though he's making efforts to, you know, sort of enliven these people. And there's this huge storm that comes in, and, you know, basically a circus ends up, you know, sort of swept into Pee-wee's farm. And the townspeople are completely opposed to these circus people, you know, like they're, you know, you have the uber kitschy type of, you know, they have the sideshow, they have, you know, a teeny tiny woman that's about the size of a, I mean, she's maybe, I don't know, 6 inches, you know, and she's married to the ringmaster. Again, there's such a joyfulness to it. And, you know, there's a celebration of this sort of, I mean, you could call it lowbrow, or you could call it really joyfully childlike, I think. Again, not taking itself too seriously, right? Because then, of course, the ringmaster decides, you know, he's inspired by Pee-wee and he revamps the whole show, and it's sort of a circus of the American farm. Incorporate farm animals in there. It's completely insane, right? But really funny. They had Pee-wee and one of his co-stars, whose name escapes me at the moment, a lovely woman who's the trapeze artist in the circus, basically have the longest kiss on screen. You know, I think they were trying to break a record. I'm not sure if they quite managed to do that, but if they didn't, I have to say it was pretty close. And of course, the movie starts with a dream sequence where Pee-wee is, you know, basically one of those classic crooner types, you know, again, tying in with the tiki and, you know, the kitschy and the nostalgic and so on. And he sings the girl on a flying trapeze. And actually, Paul Rubens has an incredibly gorgeous singing voice.
Is that so, Paul? You know, I don't even know who Pee-wee Herman is. Is that Paul Rubens? That's his name.
Yeah, that's his name. But like when you see the credits roll for his movies, it's like Pee-wee Herman as Pee-wee Herman. You know, to him, it's like it makes Pee-wee even like a real person, right? It makes him like a not a fictional character, but like a real character. But again, he reminds me of Mr. Bean, you know, where you introverted types tend to create these very fantastic characters. I think they all tie together with this far outness about them that I find irresistible.
It's ridiculous, but it's fun. And I actually, I don't know where I saw it, but Pee-wee Herman is, there's a movie out. It's due out for Netflix.
It is. It's called Pee-wee's Big Vacation. I can't wait to see it.
I would have been shocked if you didn't know, right?
No, I mean, honest, I've seen this great footage of him. He has this miniature little, you know, red antique car that he rides around in.
It's like a little Shriner car,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. This gorgeous little red car. And to see him in that, you know, and actually, when they started talking about that film, I had seen, you know, this somewhere or other. I don't, you know, like to keep up with this type of thing because I find it doesn't appeal to me at all. But he apparently gotten some flag because, oh, you know, he's too old to be doing this. And it's creepy. And it's ridiculous to me. Why not? Why shouldn't he do this now? What does it matter that he's
you
old?
You can be as old as you want. You can put on some makeup and be a clown. So why can't you be Pee-wee Herman?
Exactly. You know, and the thing is like, what, you get 60 and that's it? You know what I mean? That life is over. I mean, come on. That's just
I guess he's already 60, but he didn't look very old at all in the movie.
No, I mean,
the preview,
younger than his age. I mean, even now he still has, you know, what you'd call the baby face, right?
Did you never met Pee-wee though, right?
No, I've never met Pee-wee.
He's got a big presence on Twitter, though.
He does. He's hilarious on Twitter. He like tweets a lot of really fun stuff. Again, kitschy, ridiculous things that, you know, to me, it's a celebration of life again. And, you know, look, you know, we're here for a limited amount of time. You know, sometimes you really can't take yourself that seriously because otherwise it just sucks the life out of life, basically.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of interesting because it wouldn't kind of surprise me if, you know, back in the 60s I guess it wouldn't be counterculture back then. But the thing is that, I mean, you had the establishments, like you had established religion, you had established this, established that, and then you had this coming out of nowhere.
I mean, and it was very serious, right? It's very serious. You can't laugh. It's kind of, you know, like when they had the, oh my gosh, what was the Pussy Riot, right? Pussy Riot in Russia. You know, they had this, you know, thing where they had gone into the church and they had done this protest. And, you know, these big burly guys finally came apparently to, you know, remove them or whatever. And the thing is, I'd read that there was, I think, a press conference or whatever. And, you know, when they were showing the footage or something, some of the reporters laughed, right? And they got chastised immediately, man, because this was not funny. There was nothing funny about this. Nobody laughs, right?
The whole thing is hilarious, of course, right?
Yeah.
But so. I mean, it's funny, but it's not funny. It's kind of similar to me to some of these feminine protesters that you see.
I know. There's absolutely a serious aspect to it. But what I'm saying though is that, you know,
it's like it's using the ridiculous and the absurd.
Exactly. And the thing is that, you know, again, you had those reporters who really got, you know, chewed out for, you know, there's anybody who gets caught laughing, they're out the door. This is not funny. There's no laughing. And you know, you find that again in you know, whenever you get into a totalitarian way of thinking, suddenly nothing is funny. You know, you can't laugh at anything. And, you know, this is how you end up, I think, like, you know, in North Korea, where you have these men with these gigantic military hats, and you're like, dudes, you just seem to realize you've turned yourselves into a clown car.
You know what's hilarious about, I find hilarious about North Korea is that even the guy's hair everything, it's like something out of a... like a Mao Zedong, I don't know, wristwatch or something. It's like living kitsch in a sense. Yeah. Some of what's going on there.
But see, the thing is, though, I think the difference between, you know, good kitsch and bad kitsch is the bad kitsch, you're not aware of it. You know,
the bad kitsch is it can kill you.
And there's that too, and it can and it does. You know, we see that, you know, happen all throughout history, and, you know, to this very day. I think a lot of times when, you know, you like, I watch the news or I get tidbits of something happening here or there, I think, you know, Fromm's book Escape from Freedom has never been more relevant, and more people should read that book. You really see that the fear of freedom.
Yeah, like even religion. I mean, everything. I was thinking about it because when I was raised, you know, when I was a kid, my dad was actually a big fan of Barry Goldwater, and I mean, it was we were watching Ronald Reagan movies, the whole deal. The Waltons, Lawrence Welk. I mean, you think of something like Kitsch and Tiki and that stuff that came out of this. I mean,
I think it was kind of there's something very rebellious about it. You know what I mean? It's like turning things on their head and making fun of them and reinventing them in a way that you know, celebrates freedom, which was, you know, it's the very opposite of how things got started. There was this sort of very regimental type of, you know, like, again, when you think of the old Welt shows there that we just mentioned, you know, where you had the dancers, and it was almost like in a strange way, it's almost like an army. You know what I mean? Everything is squeaky clean. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they had the bubble machine and Lawrence.
Yeah,
and,
it's just, there's a kind of creepy sort of,
like Northern Korea. Look at the choreographed crazy shows they have there.
Right, exactly. It's exactly the same thing in many ways. You know what I mean? It's this sort of acceptable thing. Everything's acceptable. Nothing's out of line. You know, the girls are girls and the boys are boys and et cetera. You know, everything is in its little compartment, and nothing is scary or odd, or, you know, it's just this sort of prefab type of life that, you know, I mean, I, I could, that's the kind of thing I mean, I've always found really not a life worth living.
Okay, so you have your existing book, you have a new book that you're working on, and that's The Atheist Tiki Hour. Yeah, your existing book is, that one is, oh my goodness.
There's a hula girl on my dashboard, how I left faith behind and embraced life.
It always comes back to hula girls.
Yeah.
And then, and then you have a new one coming out, and that's the story about the tomboy. How does that go?
The Rollicking Adventures of an Unrepentant Tomboy.
So what's that? Do you have anything forming in your head about that?
Sort of, you know, it's just basically one of the things, you know, when the idea came to me, the first thing I felt, you know, a strong need to do was to design a cover, which is,
the cover's good.
I love designing covers because I find them incredibly inspiring. And, you know, it's kind of like there's this great moment in Ed Wood, which was a, you know, fantastic Tim Burton movie about Ed Wood and his relationship with Bela Lugosi. And at one point, Ed Wood goes to he's trying to get hired, you know, to do this movie for this guy who produces crap, basically. And, you know, Ed Wood asks the man, you know, like, you know, do you have a script? And he says, fuck no, but there's a poster.
That should be good.
So once you have a cover, there you're in business, right? But it just captures the essence of the book so well. I just again want to talk about, you know, the joy of life, you know, as I've experienced it. And one of the important things about this book, when I came up with the idea, was I'm going to write this to make myself happy. You know, what a concept. I was trying to accomplish something that would be helpful or useful or which are all good things. But, you know, I've always tended to forget myself so often in the equation that I thought, what if I just write something for fun? You know,
yeah, exactly.
Start writing something. And actually, when I was thinking about the book, I came up with, you know, a sentence to, you know, capture what the book would be about. And I liked it so much that I turned into a t-shirt. And basically, it goes like this: eat penny candy while sitting on the sidewalk and do your own damn thing. You know, be your kind of happy. So this is kind of the state that I'm going to be operating from when I'm writing this book.
So there's lots to say. I got so many questions, so many things to talk about, but we're getting pretty close now to the cutoff.
Okay. You know, we can always get together again anytime you'd like, my dear. It's always such a blast to talk with you. You're just such a lovely fellow.
Oh, thanks. So Logos, I don't think I actually introduced you. So Logos Pilgrim. So let me know, or let the listeners know, where can they find you on the web?
They can find me on my website, logospilgrim.com. That's all one word. They can also find me on Twitter. I'm very active on Twitter. Again, Logos Pilgrim. Also known as the Quiet Professor, because I tend to be quiet. And, you know, Professor, well, that has a lot to do with Professor Snape and the fact that, you know, I dressed up like him for so long. So it basically turned into a term of endearment.
We got to cover that too. Yeah, there's so much to talk about. And listen, Logos Pilgrim, thanks so much for coming back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It was like a pure delight. You're absolutely lovely. Thank you.
Welcome to the Russian Zuko.
Thus concludes this episode of Share a Slice with Sean. Music is A Russian Circus Story by the Freak Fandango Orchestra and Sophisticated Savage by Voodoo Suite. Both are available for download at freemusicarchive.org. Thanks for listening, and tally ho.